and most of it just placed as it was, the barn the same way, dovetailed, very few nails. It had no closets upstairs except what Alex built in. It had an artesian well and a septic tank, about 10 feet of property in the front and about an acre up in the back, which was built around the hill. The second floor of that house, the hall of the second floor of that house, opened up onto the backyard.
Oh.
Doors.
Whereabouts was this located?
Between Norton Hill, which is a continuation of Wells Hill, and the Salisbury Lime Rock Road. The house was between the two. It still stands there with two posts with electric lights on the top, right in between those two roads. Has a stone wall in front of it. A small barn.
I see.
The Salisbury Lime Rock Road.
Yes, I know the house. You called it the Bate Tompkins house.
They were the people who owned it. For us, they, after that, lived in Taconic. The sister-in-law still lives in Taconic, Mrs. Tompkins.
And this was about 1941?
That was about 1941.
That you moved there. You had two
I had
girls
two
at the time.
Children. One was seven and one was three.
Did you find that Lime Rock was more of a business community at that time than it is now, that is having a store?
Lime Rock had
office?
One store, general store, which contained the post office, run by Philo Lyon and his family. That was the only store in Lime Rock. I believe, as I recall, the only things he sold were food products. So it being a general store was only general as far as food, when he did not sell clothing other than shoelaces, things like that. There was no other business in town until the Institute of General Semantics took a house, but I wouldn't call that a business. The mill was not operative at that time, and the racetrack was not yet built. That was property that belonged to Benjamin Franklin Vale, and it was a potato field and a corn field. That's where the Lime Rock racetrack is now. We attended Trinity Church at that time. That's about,
was the school still open? Or had that been, that one-room schoolhouse,
no.
Had that been closed?
That had been closed, and those, the children who formerly went to that, went to the school in Lakeville. And the first, the kindergarten, first, second, third grades were in the Grove School in Salisbury. And third grade and up were in Salisbury Central School, which is now the lower building. And my youngest child, who was in kindergarten at that time, went to the Grove School in Salisbury, and she had to get on the taxi or the bus, which picked her up in Lime Rock, at 8 o'clock in the morning, and did not get home from kindergarten until 4 in the afternoon, because they had no double session whereby they could bring the morning children home and take them back. The buses did not run that frequently. So she stayed in kindergarten from 8 in the morning until 4 in the afternoon.
What a long attention span.
She came home looking like nothing that went out in the morning.
That's a long time.
Well, they changed that after a while, and then I began to, I took a position working at the school as secretary, and when she went to first grade, I took her to school so she would not have to have that long bus trip both ways, which added practically 45 minutes onto her agenda of her day. She was too young.
Yes.
But would you like to hear one interesting thing about Lime Rock and someone who lived there?
Oh, absolutely.
There was a family, Fred Shaw, and I'm sure people who lived here in this area in the, I would say, the 50s, 50 to 58, 57 or 58, would remember him. He was an artist, and he lived on the little, on the road that goes around a little circle. The old iron forge was in the back, and he lived in a little house on that road, and he had, in addition to his painting, he had made a diorama of the old iron forge, and it was a very beautiful diorama. It was, I would say, perhaps 3 feet in diameter, maybe 2 feet deep,
uh-huh.
rounded dome on the top. And he had that in his home, and I believe at that time the town of Salisbury was negotiating with him into regarding buying this diorama to place it in town hall. In the meantime, in August in 1955, we had that horrendous flood, which is history here in Connecticut, wiped out Winston
mm-hmm.
and many
mm-hmm.
other cities.
Yes. Yeah.
And it rained steadily for 5 days, and I remember at the end of the fourth or fifth day, the water was running down the hill behind my house, under it, and out down the steps into the front. The brook across the street, the small brook there, did not come up to the level of our place, but it did go over the lot, just below where, who is it lives there? Mary Clark lives there now, and the Franceforts Antique Place, and Marcello and Wanda Lorenzo had a liquor store there, and that was down in that area. And the water came up, and it covered the hedges. It also covered this artist, Mr. Shaw's first floor, and he could not get out. My two girls and John Bertie, who lived, Chilly O'Bertie's son, went over to Shaw's property in bathing suits, and they swam over the hedges, across the fields, in the water, to Mr. Shaw's second floor. They went into the house, swam into the house, and rescued his diorama. And my girls held the diorama, treading water above their heads, while Johnny came with the rowboat. And they put the diorama in the rowboat, and they rescued it, and they brought it to shore. Then they had to go back and get Mr. and Mrs. Shaw. They took them out of their second floor with a rowboat, and after they were safely ensconced in my home, my girls and John went back, and they swam all around the house, dove down underneath into the kitchen, and found floating oranges, lemons, onions, and among other things. The reason they dove down was because he was worried about his very good cameras.
Uh-huh.
And they rescued the cameras, how good they were after they got them out, I don't know.
Yeah.
But they brought them over in rowboats, and they sat in our house, and Mr. Shaw had a marvelous sense of humor. He sat there laughing, and he was so positive about everything. He figured there was some reason for this. But what happened to the diorama after that, I don't know, because Mr. Shaw's house went up in flames about 3 or 4 years later, and everything was completely ruined.
Oh, really?
He did not die in the fire. His wife had died, I think, just a few months before. But the house was totaled by flames, and I believe he went to live. They had no children. I believe he went to live with a nephew or someone, and I don't know what happened to him after that or what happened to the diorama.
To the diorama.
I think that, I don't know whether that went up with the flames or not. I don't recall that, what happened to it.
It never did end up at
It never did
town
end
hall.
Up in town hall, no.
Oh. What an adventure for your girls to remember.
Well, they had been very good swimmers. They were about 12 and 13, 14 at that time.
Uh-huh.
No, 12 and 15.
Uh-huh.
So they were not little.
But
they were good swimmers, and so was Johnny Bertie. And
mm-hmm.
he was the only other child in the neighborhood around that time, except the Patchen.
Uh-huh. That creek was the one that comes down to 112.
That's
right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there must have been extensive flooding all through.
Oh, yes, all through there. But we were just high enough so that it did not hit our house except to go run under it because we were on the side of the hill.
That can be disastrous for your cellar.
We didn't have a cellar.
Fortunately.
No, we had a root cellar, just a dirt root cellar in that house.
Mm-hmm. You say to get back to the house for a minute, you say that you thought had been built on a cemetery?
That's what I had been told. Whether that was folklore or truth, I never knew.
Uh-huh.
But many people who lived in that area claimed that it was built over a cemetery. Had I known that, I probably would never have bought it.
Just as well you didn't know it while you were there. Then mostly there was very little business going on in Lime Rock.
There
was
no
more
business.
Residential. No business at all.
No.
Considering the flourishing community it had been, that's quite a change.
Yes, farming.
Yes.
The Belters had a big farm there, and Franklin Vale had where the racetrack is now.
The railroad depot had gone by then.
I never saw that.
Uh-huh. I think from other interviews that I heard and listened to, it was further up or further east along the Housatonic.
It was.
Yes. But it had been a milk collection point.
That was before I went there.
Before your time.
That's
before
right.
your time.
Before I lived there. Anyway.
Yes. And how long did you live then in Lime Rock?
About 20 years, 25 years, 20 to 25.
So your girls went from Lime Rock to, through all of their schooling?
Yes, through all their
and
high school. And regional high school.
The regional, Well, that was quite a trip for them.
Well, we were close to regional.
But that's
It was a trip to the public school, but they had buses. It was just that 1 year of kindergarten. That was rather gruesome.
Where was the, you mentioned the Grove Street School was the, for the primary. That is no longer standing, is it?
I don't know what has happened to it. It was on Grove Street, near Jim Du Bois's house.
Up in Salisbury.
It had been a private house that was made into a school. And we used to send the hot lunches from Salisbury Central School up there every day by bus. Then they, when they built the new school, the upper building, then they discontinued the Grove Street Grove School.
Well, could you tell us a little about the school then?
The Grove
Salisbury Central.
Oh, Salisbury Central.
Or Grove Street.
I don't know anything much about that except that my younger
daughter
went to school. But when I, Mr. Charles Fitz, who was the secretary of the Board of Education, informed me that he needed a, they needed a part-time secretary to work in the principal's office. And she had to know how to mimeograph, of course, and typing, and all of those skills, which are nothing compared to what you have to have now. So he asked me if I would be interested, and I said I thought I would. My youngest child was only five and was going into first grade, and I couldn't quite see how I could get her, you know, to Grove Street School there, where she would have to stay for 2 years and work in the other school. So he had her put in the other school, even though she lived in Lime Rock. All the Lime Rock children had to go to the Grove School. But as long as I could transport her myself, she was allowed to go to the Central School, where my other daughter was. So I worked there for five different principals, starting right after Paul Birch. And anybody who's lived in this town very long remembers Paul Birch. He was one of our first principals up there. And after Paul Birch, Tom Bowden. And after Tom Bowden came Henry Ford. And he lived in the house, which is now the Housatonic Mental Health Center.
He
lived there, and then after Henry Ford came, I think it was Alex Eggleston after Henry Ford. And I worked as Alice Eggleston's secretary for 10 years. And then we had Mr. Robert Sullivan, and then Norman Stephen. So I worked under five or six different principals then. And the job moved from being a four-hour part-time job to a full-time job, plus a couple of weeks after school closed in the spring, summer, and before it opened in the fall. And I worked there until I took early retirement at the age of 62. So I worked there for 25 years. And ran the hot lunch program, the federal hot lunch program, which was part of the job. Which I did not know when I took it originally until I'd been in it for a week or two, and then
what did that entail? Running the
Well, now they just discontinued that this year. It entailed buying all of the food, hiring the with the Board of Education's approval, of course, the people who worked in the kitchen, making up the menus, taking care of the money, depositing it in the bank, keeping all of the records, and since it was a federal program, the taxes and the monthly reports to the federal government. It was run by the United States Department of Agriculture. And just keeping the records of the hot lunch also, in addition to doing the buying and supervising the cooking and the money. And
you had to supervise the cooking as well?
Not actually in the kitchen, but just be sure that they used the things that we were compelled to use that were USDA donated. And they had to be preserved under certain conditions. They could not be defrosted under adverse conditions. And just generally supervise that type of thing, not the actual cooking.
I yes, and
the planning the menus and yes. doing the buying.
You had to do.
So that was in addition to.
Did the federal funds take care of the whole?
Never.
All of the food?
Never.
No, just never. Certain food?
They subsidized the program at that time. It was subsidized on a percentage basis.
Mm-hmm.
And it never covered the cost of operating the federal lunch program.
Mm-hmm.
But the Board of Education used to allocate funds each year.
Oh.
Into it. And it was audited every year by
mm-hmm.
people
yes.
from the government.
Was there a cafeteria, a regular
yes.
cafeteria there?
Yes, there was always a cafeteria, even in the lower building, which
That's
is where
I
we
meant.
Started.
Yeah.
There was a cafeteria there, a small one, and a, so it must have been a kitchen. I don't ever remember seeing the kitchen, but it must have been a kitchen. Yes, there was a cafeteria, and that was when we sent the meals up to the Grove School
mm-hmm.
by the bus that took the kindergarten children home, delivered the food up there.
Mm-hmm.
And we only had one lunch worker at that time, one woman who did all the cooking.
She did all the cooking?
When we were down in the lower building, but we mm-hmm. didn't have that many taking lunch. Then in 1954, I think it was, when the upper building, the new building, was built, and we had a larger cafeteria, and they sent all of the children to Salisbury Central School, not just those who were in the district, but the children from Grove School came up there also. We had we averaged a couple of hundred a day eating in the cafeteria.
Oh.
And we used to put those lines through in about 12 minutes each, three sections.
That's fast.
It was fast, but, you know, it was pretty good. That
yes.
And it, then we had many workers.
About how many children were enrolled in the school?
Well, when I was there, it went from about 250 up to close to 500. Now it has decreased again.
Yes, yes. I think that's common all
mm-hmm.
over.
We were close to 500 just before I retired, I remember.
Oh,
that.
We were. Was Grove Street the only other school in the district that was used at that time?
To my knowledge.
Uh-huh.
These other smaller schools like Lime Rock and Taconic had all closed.
They had
and
been
consolidated.
Closed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I see. That's very interesting. About how many classes did you, well, you had from kindergarten to eighth
we
grade.
We had kindergarten to eighth grade.
Yes. Yes, and the number of classes would fluctuate
that
with the enrollment.
That varied from year to year, of course, as it does now.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Yes. Well, that was a long time. You got to know the school very well.
Yes, quite well. And the children, and when you know it's time to retire is when you see the children's children coming to school.
Yes. How true. I've experienced
yes.
that myself. In fact, I did have some of my own in or children that whose
yeah.
parents I had had when I first started teaching.
Right.
It's
you
quite a feeling.
You do have some funny experiences, don't you?
Yes. Well, could you tell us anything more about the school, or shall we go on to...
I think that's about it for the school.
Okay.
I mean, just...
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Well, then, when you... married Mr. Bellini, you moved yourself
to
you yourself moved to
I moved
Lakeville.
From Lime Rock up here to Wells Hill Road in Lakeville.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. And have lived here ever
and
since.
Lived here. Not that long, actually.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, I see. Well, now you mentioned something when we were speaking earlier about how he worked his way up in the bank. I remember him being referred to as the bank president here.
Well, he started in when he moved up here from Winsted after he graduated from the Gilbert School. And he took a position in the Salisbury Bank and Trust Company when it was up where the McNeil, Wagner McNeil Insurance place is now. On the that
mm-hmm.
white building across from the Hollywood
yes.
House.
Yes.
And he started in just as a teller and doing other odd jobs and gradually worked his way up. And he was president of the Salisbury Bank and Trust Company for 26 years.
Oh.
28 years, I'm wrong. 28 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, then he saw that bank grow
also.
So he
saw that bank grow, and he retired just before they moved into the new bank where it is now located.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh. He was quite prominent and active in other
yes,
organizations,
was, yeah,
wasn't he?
He was really a civic leader, very definitely. He
uh-huh.
established a great deal of... great many organizations or help in their establishment, such as 4-H here, and which was not in Lakeville, but connected with it in the beginning of 4-H, and Boy Scouts, and I couldn't even begin to mention them all, but almost everybody knows it was in just about everything, all the community affairs, and the Homemakers Help, Homemakers Aid Association out of West Cornwall, and of course in the Masonic fraternity.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't he Grandmaster?
He was Grandmaster in 1967 and 8. Mm-hmm. Grandmaster of Masons in Connecticut. And the Bissell Fund. I just couldn't begin to enumerate all the things.
Did he help administer the Bissell Fund?
I think at one time he was on the board of directors, but it was way, way back.
Uh-huh.
Right after Dr. Bissell established that.
Yeah.
That I was not married to him at that time, so I don't remember too much about that.
I've heard references to the Bissell Fund, but I'm not sure exactly what it is.
It's a philanthropic fund that was established by Dr. Bissell to aid people who could not afford to pay their total medical bills. It may have been changed in past years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But that was what it was originally, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want to be held to that. But
yes.
That's
in the town of Salisbury.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, that might have extended to other places now also.
That's very worthwhile. Well, I think we've covered a great deal. Is there anything more that you can think of?
No, my life hasn't been all that exciting and great.
I imagine you've seen a lot of changes in Lakeville.
Well, yes. Of course, from where the Lakeville Cafe is now, when I came here, it was a First National Market. We used to have to stand in the meat line, the ration line, during the war.
Oh.
For meat rations. Mm-hmm. I met a lot of interesting people in the meat line, and we became very good friends. We used to have to get there early and stand there long.
Uh-huh. I guess you came. You had to come up here to shop from Lime Rock.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess there was another food store here.
There was an A&P down by the Shell, where the Shell station is.
Mm-hmm.
And Darwin Miller had a little restaurant down on... No, he ran the department store. I'm wrong about that. And Salis Lake Jewelers were around the corner there, too. They were all in a row there where the Shell station is.
Uh-huh.
In that corner.
Was the Barnett store still there?
The Barnett store. And that's the one
that
Darwin Miller ran after.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
I see.
That was there at that time.
Uh-huh.
And then a garage on the corner, Dufour's Garage was on the corner.
Uh-huh.
Told about that, I'm sure. Those places.
Dufour has been mentioned. Someone said in one interview mentioned that Ma Dufour, or the mother, ran a store called the Hub.
That I don't know.
Well, maybe that before your time again. Yes.
It must have been.
Yes, probably.
I know Frances Lemoyne's father, when she was Frances Hand, she was one of a pair of twins.
Mm-hmm.
Her father ran a little store called the Jigger Shop.
Mm-hmm.
You've heard of that in your interviews, I'm sure.
Yes.
And then where Goody Dunce's apparel place is there, her sewing places, that used to be a little stationery store.
That type of store has gone.
He had records and stationery and things like that. It's amazing. I can't remember his name because isn't that awful?
Yeah. I think the interesting thing is that the type of commerce in Lakeville has changed.
Yes, because that was one little stationery store and the post office, two food markets, a liquor store, and a drugstore.
Yes.
Tony Gentile had the drugstore.
Yes.
But no, none of these small shops as we have now.
No. Well, they're more boutiques now.
Yes.
Yes.
Because there's nothing like that.
Yeah. Where the apothecary shop is, has that always been?
That used to be Rudman's Meat Market.
Oh.
And then it was bought by Tony Gentile, and it became the apothecary shop.
I see.
And it's still the apothecary shop.
Yes.
It used to be a meat market.
I see. Yes, there have been changes. And probably more residential along Main Street than it is now, because a number of those houses have become businesses and offices.
Pavola, that was the name of the stationery store, and I don't know why I couldn't remember that name. Pavola's.
Uh-huh.
The Hotchkiss boys used to come down all the time and buy all of their little knickknacks and things down there.
Oh,
yes. It's just a little place.
Mm-hmm.
They sold linoleum.
Linoleum?
Yeah, linoleum and records and crayons and pencils and paper.
Yes.
Just a little novelty shop.
Well, now that is a... I think there are three shops
there. Yeah, there are three shops in there.
And they have the confectionery.
And Mrs. Dunce is in the back.
Mrs. Dunce and the,
the
stockbroker has an office there. Very good. Well, thank you very much. I think
welcome.
I appreciate this.